Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.
Big day, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Big here, your host this afternoon, and we have a very special guest on the line, Veronica Conway. Veronica, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Before we get this interview started, the first thing we want to do is get all of your contact information out.
Okay. So people can come to a general website of mine at www.veronicaconway.com. That's www.veronicaconway.com. But if they want to actually set up some time with me, they can go to veronicaconway.com/schedule. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But they can go to www.veronicaconway.com/schedule.
All right, great. Now, some people don't know that we've had you on the show in the past, and it was such a great interview, and you helped a lot of our listeners and archive people, you know, that came and listened after the interview. And when you saw that we were starting back up again, you know, you're one of the first people who came to us and said that, hey, you're doing even bigger things than before, and if we could have you as a guest on the show. And, you know, that's never a problem, especially when you guys are doing even bigger things. Now, I know that you have coached for thousands of hours and that you've also coached all
yes,
walks of life.
Yes, I have.
So, you know, a little bit about, you know, how does one begin to create personal and professional mastery, you know, based on your coaching sessions?
Well, what I would say, you know, it's funny because I've been coaching a lot of people lately. I can't even tell you. Countless hours on the phone. And here's what I see out here. There's a phenomenon that I've really observed, I think, since 2008 when the economy tanked and people started getting worried. And I started to hear it show up in people's language. Right, so there's this phenomena that I coined a term for called venture trauma, venture failure and venture trauma. And what venture failure is it's when, you know, anybody sets out to do a big thing in the world and it fails, right? So right now we have economies all over the world failing, and we have institutions failing, and we have the mortgage market failing, and we have the stock market failing. And so what I find is that the climate that that creates internally for people is a thing that I call venture trauma. So venture failure leads to this thing called venture trauma. And so what I hear, because I have very intimate, personal, private, exploratory conversations with people, is that people are showing up in a lot of trauma. They're showing up in a lot of fear and paralysis and stuckness, and they don't feel like they have the traction that they had before, you know, we have this event in the world called, you know, the economy collapsing globally. And so so the first thing that I think people have to do is begin to get clear that that's the environment that they are living in, and that they may not be performing as powerfully as they could be because of this phenomenon that's happening all over the world and the internal conversation that it creates in the mindset, the internal stuckness that it creates in one's psychology. So so I think that's the first thing, is to get really clear about the environment in which you're operating and to begin to locate yourself inside of your environment. You know, and the thing that I hear so much as I speak to people is that they may be at the effect of some trauma, but they are not really aware of it because it's this very subconscious conversation that's happening that just stops them in their tracks, but they don't get that they're having it, right?
Now, would this be the type of subconscious conversations that we aren't aware of, or the type of semi-conscious conversations where, as let's say, I see the light turning, I know the light is green, and I'm thinking, oh, I know that light's going to turn yellow before I make it, or I know that light's going to turn red before I hit it, or, you know, I don't think I can run 10 miles. This guy wants me to come into a 10-mile race, even though I've been running 8 miles for 2 years. That type of, or is it more subconscious than that?
I think it can be very subconscious, because I don't think that people know how to locate themselves inside of an inner conversation. Your inner conversation really dictates all of your results, right? And so, but it can be very invisible to us, right? We don't realize that we're having it. We don't realize that we have fear that stop us from showing up powerfully in the interview. We don't realize that we have fear that stop us from launching a business. We don't realize that we have fears from going out and making the phone calls that we know we need to make to prospects and clients. And so what will happen is if that the more deeply subconscious or unconscious that conversation is, the more it impacts our life. So the more it's outside of our conscious awareness, the more we operate from it. You know, if I kind of know that I'm afraid to make those 10 phone calls, right, because I believe they're going to reject me, or I believe, you know, what's the use? My business is failing anyway, right? The more I'm aware of that, then I might be able to, you know, kind of address it and kind of work around it and kind of compensate for it. But if I don't know that that's what's happening, then I'll just avoid doing the things that I know I need to do, and I'll wonder why I can't seem to get up and get motivated to do them. And so because my work is a combination of both, you know, real strategy and, you know, nuts and bolts, you know, business tactics and revenue models, but before we go there, you have to take a step back oftentimes and get clear about the mindset that you have in place that's either supporting you or that's hindering you from really optimizing your performance. So it begins with mindset. Because mindset's everything. Because you will fight to maintain whatever the identity is. So if you have the identity of failure, you'll fight to maintain that. If you have the identity of being unstoppable, you'll fight to maintain that. So we have to often go back and take a very deep, candid, hard look at how our thoughts, how our thinking, and how our mindset's actually impacting our current performance.
Wow, and I can see how that can affect a lot of people, especially with us as a country and now almost as a world in general, thinking about how the economy is just not picking up. And then if you think like that, then of course you're going to even do things that is going to bring that truth into your life, whereas you don't make those phone calls because you don't think anyone's out there spending.
Right, you think, what's the use? Right. You think what?
Now,
I
have a question for you. When, you know, I really respect your insights and thoughts from the conversations we've had, and then just reading, you know, some of the things that you've placed out there. I've joined your mailing list, of course, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about yourself before you became this powerhouse in the industry. You know, where did you come from? How did you get to, you know, this point?
Well, it's a pretty colorful and wild story. I was born the child of a former Black Panther. And so when I was a kid, I lived in a communist collective in Northern California. I went to school under an alias. I witnessed police shootouts with the cops. And then when my dad got arrested back in the 70s, I had a very high profile civil rights trial where he was convicted of murder and was sentenced to life in prison. And so before age 7, you know, I had gone to school under an alias. I had received death threats against my life. I studied Marxism and communism every day. And it was a very strange atmosphere to live in an environment where, A, you know, your life was basically a secret because my dad was running from the FBI and Quantelpro and all these different people. And then to go through that very traumatic experience where, you know, we had this trial in the Bay Area, and it was intense, and it was my mom had to move me out of the county because of all the death threats. So, you know, after that, my mom attempted to restore as much normalcy as she could to my life. I'd been pretty traumatized. I grew up in the Bay Area, but I began to ask questions, even at a very young age, about what was freedom, and specifically what did freedom mean for people of African descent, because, you see, I'd seen my dad, even though he was incarcerated, live basically as though he were a free man, and I saw a lot of people of African descent walk around as though they were incarcerated. And I began to ask, is freedom a function of choice, or is freedom a function of mindset, especially for people of African descent? Because I knew that we'd been traumatized by our experience here in the United States. I knew that we'd been traumatized, right? But what did that mean, and what was the impact of that trauma on our behavior? You know, I say the biggest venture trauma in the history of black people is slavery and Jim Crow, because of the psychic legacy that it created and the imprint that it created in our psyches. So I really began to ask the questions about, you know, is that a choice, or is that, like, can you choose to be free? And what would that mean? And so as I got older, I went to college at UC Berkeley, and I began to identify what I call victim think in the black community. I kept saying, gosh, you know, we live in the first world. I know it's been hard. Nobody knows more than me, like, what, you know, the price that we paid for our freedom in the civil rights era and post, you know, but at the same time, we live in the first world, and we have choice. And somehow I knew that instinctively. So so everything in my circumstances really brought me to begin the work that I was doing, A, because I needed to heal my own trauma, because I've been through so much, right? Like, I had to get healed and recover from that wounding. But I also began to look at it as a possibility, like what are the techniques, what are the technologies that would actually assist people in uncovering the part of themselves that's really magnificent, really powerful, and really great. And so I began to make a real study of that. So I went to I got married, had a couple of babies, and I went to an event, a Tony Robbins event, right, the Big Tooth Guy.
Oh,
movie.
Wow. Yeah,
yeah.
Great.
And I made
a big biblical-type book that he's written.
Tony's written, you know, Tony is, the technology that he uses is a technology called neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis. And so I made a decision at that event. I did the firewalk seminar, right? We walk across a burning bed of hot coals. It's kind of a mind over matter thing. And I began to, and then I made a decision. I got a vision for, you know, transforming the planet with this work. And I find that when people make a true decision, like a true decision, not like I hope it'll happen one day, or it'd be a preference if it would happen one day, and it'd be nice if it would happen one day, only if somebody would give me the pat on the head and tell me it was okay, they'd give me permission to do it. I actually made a decision that I was going to take this work into the world. And so a couple of weeks later, I found coaching, I signed up right away and went to my first coaching class and began to study coaching, and out of that I began to build a business. I founded the Black Professional Coaches Alliance, which is the world's only network of African American life and business coaches, and I just really became sort of unstoppable in terms of answering a call to a vision to really take this work out into the world.
Wow.
So that's how I got here.
That's great. Now, let's say let's say I have anger issues. Now, this here is not me. I'm just kind of bringing up a scenario.
Sure.
And I'm talented, but my anger issues, you know, kind of affect me at work, where it's almost to the point that I may, you know, even lose my job. Let's say if somebody came to you with that type of mentality, how could you assist a person like that?
Well, I've done that, actually. I mean, I have had people come to me. You know, I've got, especially early in my career, I did a lot of corporate coaching, and I had people come to me and say, you know, we've got this employee, very high potential, you know, very high PO, and, but they've got anger.
Wow, you know what, I like that, how employers are recognizing the not only the talent, but you know, the heart of the people around them, and coming to you so that you can make these people better, because they know that it'll work better for their industry. I just had to throw that in there. Carry on,
sure.
Please.
Sure. No, I mean, it is great, because people, I think that whenever you're talking about human performance, right, you have to get to mindset stuff. And I think employer, you know, enlightened employers know that. And so I've had a lot of employers, you know, come to me and say, help this person perform, do whatever you got to do, do the magic thing, right? So I've had employers come to me and say, you know, we've got a high potential person, they've got anger issues, and can you work with them? And so because I've studied, you know, neuro-linguistic programming and hypnosis and some very advanced coaching methodologies, what those methodologies allow you to do is to go in and literally reprogram dysfunctional thinking really in about an hour.
Wow.
I mean,
great.
You can clear anger in an hour. So, for example, I work with a man who was a supervisor in a municipal organization, and when we took him back to look at his anger issues, what he remembered, right, because he was a great employee otherwise, but he had this trigger anger, right? He would just trigger. And they were saying, wow, this is going to be the difference between whether or not he can keep his job. Because all things being equal, he's a fantastic employee, but this hair trigger anger, he's got to get some control over, right? So we went back and looked at the first time he was angry using NLP and hypnosis. And it turns out that he was young kid, and he was sitting out on his porch in front of his house, and someone walked into his house. It was really a traumatic event that he'd actually suppressed and repressed and forgotten about. Somebody walked into his house and shot his mother.
Wow.
And then walked out the door. So, you know, so this anger gets very hard wired into his nervous system, right? Because anytime we have an emotional event that we attribute a lot of emotion to, that it becomes hardwired in our nervous system, and we tend to filter all subsequent decisions based on that traumatic event. So he began to filter for anger, right? So every time something would come into his environment that even smelled like a threat, or even smelled like, you know, he would respond in this really over-the-top way. Well, it's because he kept playing out that event over and over and over again. And that's what we do in our subconscious mind when we don't understand. And that's what I'm saying. The more deeply subconscious it is, the more likely we are to be completely at the effect of it and not know. So if you have behaviors that you're demonstrating that you don't know why you can't get control of them, it's usually in the land of the subconscious.
Now, that
right?
may be why they always say, know thyself.
That's right.
So
that's right. But I always say that, you know, the mind's a very funny little dangerous playground. Don't go in alone. Because oftentimes we don't have the skill to go in and actually deal with some of those deeper traumas
right.
on our own. So we just go to repressing them so that we can function day to day. So you often need somebody that's trained that can go in, you know, and square off with that event and basically reprogram that event. So we went in and, you know, it took about 45 minutes. We went in, we did a process, right? We basically cleared the anger. We had him redecide about what the event meant. And he ended up being fine. I mean,
That's great.
He kept his job. He kept performing. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. And so this applies to everybody. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a mom, if you're if you want to lose weight, you know, a lot of times you have to go back in. Yeah, so you either have results or you have reasons. You either have the result that you want, or you have a bunch of reasons that usually exist in the subconscious mind.
Now, do you start off by just asking them the conscious questions before you go through the programming and just say, why do you think? And then that way it leads deeper and deeper?
No, I actually, after coaching thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours, I can usually diagnose somebody in the first 3 minutes.
Wow.
I can kind of hear
That's
what
good.
It is. And
now,
then,
Veronica, before we go a little further,
yeah. uh-huh.
we have a caller from the 336 area code.
Okay.
I don't know if that caller has a question or if they just want to listen to the interview. So caller 336, area code 210, can you state your name and where you're from?
Yes, this is Felton Wooten from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hello.
How you doing, Felton?
Good, good. And I got a question, and I'm looking forward to hearing the recorded interview because I got an appointment in about 10 minutes, but I had a question. I was just wondering, what are your suggestions, and I'm also an employer of about 200 people, but also what are your suggestions to help identify the inner conversations which keep a person from moving forward?
You said, how do you identify the inner conversations?
Yes, because when you mentioned that, I thought, wow, that's interesting. But as an individual, how do you identify those conversations, that those inner conversations that's going on that keeps you from making that next step
sure.
to make a remarkable life?
Sure. Well, again, like I said earlier, you either have results or you have reasons. Either the person's getting the results that they want or there's some reason. You know, a lot of times as employers, as parents, will think, well, it's just an excuse, right?
Mm-hmm,
but it's not. The person may really want to perform in this way, and there may be
mm-hmm.
some deeper reason that they have that stops them from being able to do it. So, I mean, to me, it's very simple, okay? It's like, well, what do you want? What's the performance or the action or the activity that you want to see demonstrated? And then you just ask the person, so what's in the way of that?
Mm,
and then
okay.
out pop the reasons. Now, what you do with that, in other words, how you then, you know, what you do with that and how you pick that up and begin to transform that is sort of a whole life's work, right?
Right.
Because you can elicit the reasons that they have, but knowing how to then go in and transform that is kind of a whole other thing. But, you know,
right.
but the short answer is, what's the vision? What's the current reality? What's the gap? What's the story that they have about what's in the way?
Mm-hmm. Okay. But then the next step is then, I guess, having someone that's going to help you make that jump, that leap?
Yeah, it's helping to deconstruct the reason. In other words,
yes.
you know, we often have no idea on the surface what the reasons are that I'll give you an example. I worked with a CEO once, CEO of a $55 million company, right? This is a woman. And she had this story called, I don't have enough time. 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 And on the surface it looked like, well, that's reasonable. I mean, she's a CEO and she's busy and she's got a big company and she's got a big team and all this stuff, right? And it seemed reasonable on the surface, but when we went in and looked at the real reason, the moment that she first decided that she didn't have enough time,
mm-hmm.
this is going to sound strange and weird, but I'm going to say it anyway, we regressed her back to the time that she made that decision, and she realized that actually happened when her mom was pregnant with her.
Wow.
And that there was this sense of urgency about not having enough time, and so we cleared it. Right, and then she had all of a sudden she's like, I called her next week, and she's like, I have more time than I can. This is so weird. And then when she went back to her parents at Christmas, and
mm-hmm.
asked them about, you know, was there this issue around time when you were pregnant with me? Her parents said, well, as a matter of fact, there was. Right, we were getting ready to move, and there was all this urgency. And so oftentimes, even when people are in utero. Right, they say that they're marinating in all of the atmosphere that's happening in the environment around them, and they pick up on those vibrations,
wow.
and they actually imprint into the person. So you know, if you had told this high powered CEO that you know that that's how she was going to get time back, you never would have known that on the surface. It would have been like a time management trick or something, or can you do your calendar right? But if you go back and you clear it at its root, at the root cause, we call it the gestalt. If you go back and clear it, then they'll just begin to filter differently in their lives. But you have
wow.
to get to the root. So a lot of times all of the techniques and tools that we use for getting control over our behavior are really ineffective unless you go back and identify and clear things at the source.
Right. Wow. I'll be interested in contacting you, and I got it down, veronicaconway.com/schedule.
Yes, forward slash schedule.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we thank you for joining us, sir, and asking that great question. Hope everything works out fine for you and that Veronica can assist your team.
Yes, yes. All right, thanks.
Thank
and
you.
I will certainly listen to the remainder of the recorded interview later.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. Veronica, can you please get out all of your contact info once again for those who may be joining us now and for later?
Sure. I can, my general website's at www.veronicaconway.com. VeronicaConway.com, and if you, I've been offering strategy sessions for people that are really committed to wanting to make a difference, to really wanting to change their game. And so if you want to schedule some time with me to talk about that, like a 45-minute session to talk about that, you can schedule with me with my online scheduler at www.VeronicaConway.com/schedule. That's www.VeronicaConway.com/schedule.
Okay. Now, Veronica, what would be the biggest advice and or quality that you could share with our audience that helped you the most?
That's a great question. It's a couple of them. I think that my commitment to, in other words, I walk my talk. I am my own laboratory. The things that I try out on, the things that I do in my work with people, I've tried on myself like 100 times. And so I've become very aware and very committed to the idea that this is an inside-out job. And if you can clear things at the internal level, right, then you don't have to actually effort towards making your goals happen. They'll just start, in other words, if you clear the blockage, you'll just begin to behave differently. And so I've done that. I've applied that to myself. I've applied that to my own life. So every time I've gone in and cleared, you know, major limiting beliefs or inner conflicts, or then things have just kind of opened up for me very magically, right? So I walk my talk, and I believe that the inner game is the outer game. And so I focus on, I attend to my inner game. The other thing that, And so what happens as a result of that is it allows a lot of resourcefulness. So the more clear you are, the less attached you are to things, the less limiting beliefs you have, the less fear and trauma you have, the more resourceful you become, the more things you'll try, the more innovative you become, the more available you are to going for things and, you know, thinking big and going after big vision and having conversations that kind of make you a little scared, and, you know, you become kind of all go, no stop when you have inner resourcefulness. But you have inner resourcefulness out of doing the inner work, out of transforming that inner conversation.
Good.
So I would say it starts with my inner game, and then how I've dealt with it in my outer reality has just been very resourceful.
Now, we all love stories, and we've all loved stories from childhood. And can you share with us another story about some of the things that people can do right now to change?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, you know, first of all, it's getting really clear. I think all things, first of all, emerge from vision, right?
Okay.
And most people don't really have vision. Most people have an idea of what would be great to happen, a concept of what they'd like to do. You know, it's fuzzy, it's muted, it's dim, it's not really a vision. When I say vision, I mean something that is so lit up in your nervous system that you can't stop moving towards it. When I launched my businesses, I was so lit up in my nervous system that it didn't matter what obstacles were happening, didn't matter what came my way, didn't matter what I had to plow through, the vision was bigger than the current circumstances. Right? And so when your vision is bigger than the current circumstances, then you're bigger than the current circumstances. And most people aren't lit up that way. They're not aligned that way. They're not empowered that way. Not really. So that's the first thing, is to get a vision. Now, what often stops us from really having a powerful vision is this thing called trauma. right? Venture trauma, venture failure. So I'll give you an example. I worked with a young woman recently who had experienced a failure, right? She had lost a job. And she lost a job, but she had become so identified with that loss that she, instead of realizing that she'd had a failure, she thought that she was a failure.
Wow.
Notice the difference. And so when you're walking around thinking, I am a failure, you will only filter for evidence that you are a failure. And so she was showing up powerfully in a lot of other places besides her job, in her community, in her civic responsibility, with the National Urban League, with all kinds of things that she was doing very powerfully, but she couldn't find any power, any resourcefulness, because she was stuck on the word failure, and she thought that's who she was. So that stopped her from having any vision for what was next, any real vision where she could be connected to it, be inspired by it, feel like she could get up and do it every single day despite the obstacles. So we had to do a process with her that helped her get clear, that helped her de-identify from the failure. Because as long as she thought she was a failure, she would continue to filter for that reality. So once we cleared that, out popped the vision, and she got some resourcefulness. Oh, well, I could try that. Oh, I'm not a failure. I'm actually a success. Oh, this is where I've been successful. She could actually find the evidence in her life for success, which led to her focusing on more possibilities. So I'd say you got to get a vision that you're connected with first. Then if there's something in the way of having that, you have to get clear about what that is and deconstruct that. You got to deconstruct the reasons that you don't have. You either have results or you have reasons. Either you're moving powerfully towards what you want to accomplish, or you are stuck in a story about why you can't do it, because you're not smart enough or pretty enough, or you don't know math enough, or they tease you in school, or you just came out of a bad marriage, or right, it's all these stories about why you can't have it. I can't find a good man. I'll never find a good man. The story. So you got to get clear about the vision. You got to clear about what's in the way. And then once you're clear about your vision, then it's time to really get focused on what it looks like, smells like, sounds like, what it's really like when the vision is realized. And so often I find that in the era of venture failure and venture trauma, people are in a very wandering, they're wandering and wandering. They don't have any focus, right? Out of the pain of all the failure that's happening around them, out of all the trauma, they lean into distraction. They lean into, medication, self-medicating. They lean into watching TV. They lean into a lot of things that take up their time, that take up their life force, that don't really support them in having the vision.
Wow.
So it's like get vision, get your vision, remove the trauma, and then get focused. Because most things, a lot of times, most of the time, if we're not focused, we imagine that things are going to take such a long time to get done, or we imagine that they're going to take, but with pure focus, you can create miracles. I mean, I've seen people just get decided, get connected to a vision, and then go out and execute and just start blowing things out of the water, like in a question of a week. Or a couple of weeks. But that requires tremendous focus and a non-negotiable attitude towards the realization of the vision or the goal.
Wow, I like that, non-negotiable. You got me saying wow so much. I almost forgotten that it's Thursday, because wow is word out Wednesday.
You got to get non-negotiable about them. And so that means boundaries. That means you got to fiercely protect that which is most sacred. You have to fiercely protect that which is your vision. Because I promise you, there are so many things in life that will challenge that, that will distract us from that, that will take us off course. And so you got to create non-negotiable boundaries for the things that are the most sacred. I've had to retrain I'm a single mom. I have retrained my kids to support the things that are sacred in this house, right? I've trained my team to support the things that are sacred. I train my loved ones to support the things that are sacred, because some things have non-negotiable boundaries. Because in order for me to say yes to the big vision, there's a bunch of stuff I got to say no to. But so often we're saying yes to so many things just because it makes us feel good for the moment. But what we do when we do that is we sell out on the vision of our lives. We sell out on the purpose that we have and the destiny that we have because we're saying yes to all the dumb stuff. Got to give that up, y'all, boys and girls. Boys and girls, you got to give that up.
That is so true.
Because people ask me all the time, well, how have you been able to, you know, because I've been a single mom for about 8 years, right, primarily supporting my kids and myself. And I've done that plus companies, right? And people are like, well, how do you get all that done? I'm decided. There's just a few priorities that I have. You know, I've raised and educated my kids really, really well, and my purpose and my vision and my business, right? And really, that's mostly it, right? And so it's focus. It's getting clear that is sacred, that those are the sacred things, and everything else comes after that. So that's how you get stuff done, is you get targeted about what's most important.
Now, I've heard you say that you can learn from your mistakes or you can learn from your mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about why this is important.
Well, I think it's huge because I think in this day and time, in this era of venture failure, in this era of venture trauma, in this era where, you know, it's interesting, the velocity, you know, a good economy, I say, is when money, you know, they say money follows speed, right? So in a good economy, money's moving, right? There's a velocity to money, speed, everybody's moving. Now, it got us in trouble because there was a little too much velocity in the last economy, right? And so now you'll find that money has slowed down almost to a crawl. So there's not a lot of velocity.
Ideas dissipated.
That's right, right, right. So it's slow. So so because of that, especially if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you don't have time. You can always make up more money, right? But you don't have time to learn by trial and error, to learn by throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. You don't have time in this day and age to just kind of make it up as you go. But so often, entrepreneurs will come to me, like let's say, you know, they're at the beginning of a business, right? They're in a startup phase. And they say, well, I would love to work with you, Veronica, but I can't afford it right now, and because I'm just starting out, and, you know, when I was at the beginning of my career, right, I had my rose-colored shades on. I just knew that I was going to get it all done next week, and I was going to take over the role of my business, and I didn't realize the pitfalls that really come from not knowing what you don't know. And you can spend hours and days and weeks and months wandering in the land of no profitability, wandering in the land of trial and error, wandering in the land of throwing spaghetti at the wall, right? And you burn out. You know, it costs you time. It costs you money in the long run. As opposed to having some acceleration that you can get from having mentors, right? So people that are starting off oftentimes won't access mentorship or access power because they're all lit up with their vision, perhaps, but they think that they can do it themselves. When I've talked to people and we've started to run numbers on what it's costing them, what their current behavior is costing them, what the opportunity cost of them wandering in the desert like that is costing them, it turns out that they're spending more money than they could ever spend with me. Because time is money, right? Pain and suffering and struggle and mistakes are money, right? And so the other type of person that comes to me is a person that's really been, you know, they've been seasoned, they've been in business for a while, they've invested perhaps in, you know, a $10,000 website or, you know, a team or this or that, and they're still not making anything happen, right? They're still not profitable, they're still not optimizing their performance as a leader of their company, but they're so far down a path that they think, well, I can't change right now. I've invested all this money in this website, in this team. I can't change right now, right? But the thing is that in any given moment, there is an opportunity to have a pivot. There's an opportunity to have a pivotal conversation, a pivotal action, a pivotal moment that's a game changer that can change the trajectory of your game. I mean, I worked with a woman recently who, you know, she was traveling along. And she had a successful business, right? It was successful. But when we took a step back and did a revenue analysis of her business, she realized that she could be generating $120,000 an hour. That when she was optimizing her performance, She was capable of generating $120,000 an hour, meaning the biggest deal she'd done recently was $360,000. It took her 4 hours to get that deal done when she really added it up. I'm like, so when you're optimizing your performance, you're the $120,000 an hour woman. So every time you climb down your org chart to do $10 an hour work or $15 an hour work or $60,000 a year work because you haven't held your team accountable to doing their job, you're costing the organization $120,000 an hour, because when you're optimizing your performance, that's what you're capable of generating. And there's an opportunity cost for you to not do that. So it kind of blew her mind, right? Right? That's what she was costing the organization. The price of her current behavior, the price of her current mindset was $120,000 an hour. So
now,
we don't realize how much money and time we're losing by not accessing mentorship.
And performing at our optimal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Now, Veronica, I know that we can really go on for hours and talk and, just learn so much from you. But we have about 4 minutes remaining, and this comes
okay.
to time that, who would you like to thank? And, of course, we'd love to have you on any other time if you want to continue the conversation.
Sure. Thank you. Well, I'm a big fan of God and spirit. So I feel very blessed every day to actually get up and get to do work that I love and work that's my purpose. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to do my purpose in such a meaningful way and to impact so many lives. So I'm really grateful just to be here on the planet. Parents, of course. My dad, of course. I have a great team. I love my team. Paige and Dwight and Jenny, and I love my kids because my kids actually give me the gas. They put gas in my tank, right? They give me the big reason why. They give me the big reason why. So, yeah, all those folks.
Okay. Now, we'd just like for you one last time to get out your contact information at the end of this call.
Okay.
Your contact information.
You can, if you want to schedule some time with me to do a 45-minute strategy session, you can reach me at www.veronicaconway.com/schedule. veronicaconway.com/schedule. And I only want people that are committed to actually making a decision, that really want to make a decision to change their game. That's who I want to talk to. That's it. If you want to talk about how bad it is and how you can't figure it out and how you're a victim, I want to talk to you. You want to get some momentum happening and get some, right? Then I'm your girl, right? But that's it. Also, veronicaconway.com, that's the kind of the portal to my world, so you can check me out there.
You just heard veronicaconway.com, tell you like it is. Hopefully you guys will reach out and go to the website, sign up for the paper. Those of you who are really interested in changing your lives, as she said, veronicaconway.com/schedule, and you've been listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. We're going to play out the last remaining part of this interview with the Sweetest Taboo from Sade. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for thinking big.
If I tell you, if I tell you.